sequel. Don't you start now, Terry. It's not a sequel. This is what they told me. They came over and they said, okay, write a sequel. And I said, good. And they said, sequels are ripoffs. And I said, terrific. I ripped off ballplayers and managers. Now I can get the public. Now I can really rip up people. They said, no, we don't want you to do a sequel. And I said, first of all, why are sequels ripoffs? I know nothing about writing. And they said, because everything that wasn't good enough to put in the first book, you put in the sequel. I said, well, that sounds good, because that's what I was going to do. And they said, no. I went with David Fisher, my co-author, and when the first book came out, I brought him 600 pages, and I said, here, David, what do you think? And he said, it's the world's longest sentence. He said, put a period someplace, a comma someplace in there. I said, no. What are we going to do now for the second book? He said, why don't we, all the book was about you. First story, everything that funny happened to you on the field. Let's go to other umpires and other ball players and see if anything funny happened to them. I said, okay, that's a good idea. So I went up to about 30 umpires, about 100 ball players, and I said, did anything funny happen to you on the field? They said, you idiot. Why do you think millions of people watch baseball every single day? Funny things happen. You didn't make them happen, dumb. Other things happen. I thought it was just me that was out there. Have you ever seen an umpire and a manager nose-to-nose screaming and yelling at each other? Well, I thought it was me that was just yelling about, you know, my hangover's coming through or I'm blind and there's a how's your wife and all this stuff. Everybody does it. There's a person right here in Philadelphia, Eric Gregg, super guy, right? Does hot dog thing. He's on TV, 320 pounds, just like I am. You know, he's overweight, obese, and all the great things umpires are. He's out in Dodger Stadium in Los Angeles, and there's a guy by the name of Tommy Lasorda, who is a manager with the Dodgers, and he's an inspirational type of person. Should have been a Baptist minister. I mean, the man is, put him in a room with 60 Christians and he'll turn them into Judaism. The man can talk anybody into anything. He is an inspirational type of person. He's out there and Eric's out there and the Dodgers have lost 3 games in a row. They're losing this one 2-0 and Tommy Lasorda has to get something going. Eric Gregg tells me he's behind home plate and Dusty Baker, who's a batter, he calls him out on a third strike and Tommy comes racing at him. And he can't come out of the dugout and argue. Because if you argue about balls and strikes, you throw him out of the game immediately. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. You throw him out, and now it's up to $1,000 fine. And Eric's thinking, what is this guy? He got muff money? He's going to throw $1,000 bills around? All he has to do is say the pitch is low, the pitch is high, and I throw him out. That's all. Just say pitch. Doesn't even have to say pitch. Just puh, and I throw him out. And Tommy runs up to him and said, I told him to swing. He said, what? What do you mean you told him to swing? He said, I said, Dusty, swing. And when he said that, he made a swinging motion with his arms. And 50,000 people said, that's right, Eric, he didn't swing. Tommy's telling you. And Eric looked at him and he says, you're here to get him on my back. That's all right. He said, no. I don't want to get anybody in trouble. All I want, do you like pizza, Eric? Eric says, there's 50,000 people want to hang me and you're talking pizza. What are you, crazy? What do you mean pizza? He said, I'm from Philadelphia, too. We're in Norristown, Pennsylvania. I got a pizza parlor out there, and I'm going to give you 2 free pizzas. Eric says, get out of my life right now. Get away from me. I know you want to hurt me. Get away from me. He said, no. What do you want on your pizzas? Eric says, I'm 330 pounds. I want cheese, and I want pepperoni. And he said, all right, you got it. And he took one finger and put it right in Eric's nose and started to shake it and said, first one, number one is cheese. Shoving his finger in his nose, and Eric says, get out of my life. Second, 2 fingers he puts up, and he puts them both in his eyes and then in Eric's eyes. Number two, pepperoni. And he runs into the dugout and dives in before Eric can throw him out. 50,000 people give him a standing ovation. They go on to win that game 6-2. They go on and win the next 5 games in a row. Inspirational type guy. So Eric comes home to Philadelphia. He goes into Norristown, into the pizzeria, and he walks in. He says, my name is Eric Gregg. They said, oh, yeah, Eric. 2 pizzas, one with cheese and one with pepperoni. Is that right? And they said, yeah, that's right. $12.50, please. They charged him for the pizza. But see, every time you think that things are going on the field, they're not like that at all. And I thought it was just me. They're umpires are, you know, strange people. I'm 6'4 and 340. You talk about strange, okay? There's a man by the name of Ken Kaiser in the American League. He's an umpire. Now, you got to picture him because his body was put together in the dark. His arms are on backwards. He has a barrel chest. They are, because his palms face out when they hold him down to the side of his body. He has very short legs, and he was a size 15 shoe, and he duck walks. And when he walks, he waddles, and he kind of rock and rolls back and forth. And if you watch him for a couple of hours, you get seasick. I mean, he just does it. He wrestled professionally 3 years. Now, this is how smart he is. He wrestled professionally, and he still thinks it's real. Not a bright person, right? Same thing, they made him wear a mask when they wrestled. They didn't want him in public without a mask. The man looks like my twin. People come up and say, are you Kaiser? No, I'm Luciano. Oh, you look just like it. Drives me crazy. But he does the same thing that Eric did on the field. He was out at second base, and now there's no manual or booklet that tells managers how to manage. I mean, you have to learn through experience. So there's a man by the name of Tommy Lasorda, and he's with Chicago, and it's his first year managing. And now he wants to inspire his club, just like Tommy Lasorda does. So he's losing the game, and he's lost a couple games, and he goes out to Ken Kaiser. Now, Ken Kaiser will throw people out of the game for breathing heavy. I mean, you don't have to do anything. He will just say, you're gone. He's mean that day, and he's going to throw people out. Tommy comes out, or Tony comes out to him, and he said, would you throw me out of the game? He's, what do you want to get thrown out for? He said, we're going terrible. Everything's going bad. The crowd will get excited. My ball club will get excited. Maybe they'll win. And Kenny said, no, I'm not out here to help your ball club. I'm not going to throw you out. He said, well, I'll call you a dirty name. He said, well, what are you going to call me? Well, you're a bleep bleep. No, they call me that all my life. You can't call me that. I'm from the ghetto. They've called me that. He said, all right, you're a bleep 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 bleep. No, that's not good. And he goes on for 5 minutes with bleep bleeps. And finally he said, all right, I'll throw my hat in the air. Don't you throw your hat in the air. What do you do if I throw my hat in the air? I'll throw you. No, I won't throw you out of the game, but I'll do something. And anyway, they go back and forth. Finally, after about 6 minutes, he said, that's enough. And he throws him out of the game. But it doesn't work. He loses the game 8-2, right? So I asked Kenny about it, and Kenny said, well, I call it a mercy ejection. I said, a mercy ejection? He said, yeah, because I, just through mercy, I threw him out of the game, but he still didn't work. So when you see umpires and managers nose-to-nose and face-to-face, they could be talking pizza. Mm-hmm. They could be talking throwing out. And they tell me all these stories. I couldn't believe that there were things happening. They told me about the Caribbean. You say Caribbean or Caribbean?
Oh, I say both.
Okay, I do too. I didn't know which was right.
I alternate.
All right. So they're in the Caribbean or Caribbean, whatever it is. And I never knew it, but they have riots after every single game. If the home team wins, it's a nice riot. If the visiting team wins, somebody gets killed. I mean, it is that serious down there. In order for the umpires to be protected, they have a little 17-year-old militiaman in a fatigue outfit with a machine gun. And if you have a bad call, in order to keep order, you hear, I needed that when I umpired. I needed bullets to protect me on the field. I'd still be umpiring. If I was in New York and had some militiaman standing behind me going, I could work it out. In order to get off the field alive, because the militiaman, as soon as the game was over, would leave. So the umpires run off the field and they don different clothes. They carry dresses. And they carry wigs, and they run in, and they put them on, and they learn how to say, kill the umpire in Spanish. And then they run out the door, and can you imagine 300 pounds with a wig and a dress? They run out the door and say, kill the umpire, kill. Yeah, we're waiting for him right here. We're going to get him, too. It's the only way they get out alive. Now, being Luciano, I do not cross borders because they won't let me back in. I mean, it's close to April 15th now. I got to keep on the run. I mean, IRS is right after me. I was never allowed in Canada. Because I never come back into the States once they get me out. So I never went to the Caribbean or Caribbean, whatever it is, and I missed all that fun down there. And when I asked these different guys about it, there are millions of stories that they keep telling me. So I'm going to come out with strike 3 and strike 4 and strike. We can't count. So strike 17, 16 years from now, Terry, you're going to hear strike 37.
My guest is Ron Luciano, if you're just joining us, and his new book is called Strike 2. Actually, the last time I saw you was on Saturday Night Live. I saw you on my television, and they had rerun a program from, I don't know when it was initially on, but it was really funny. The show started with you calling the program on account of rain.
Yeah, that was such a clever idea. I didn't think of it. That was so much fun.
How did that show come off?
I'm going to burst your whole bubble now. First of all, they go in there on a Friday afternoon, and they hand them the scripts on Friday. And they said, here it is, an hour-long program. Learn the scripts. We'll see you tomorrow. They come back on Saturday, and at 5 o'clock, they bring in a whole live audience. They say, here it is, run through the show. And I was in about four or five skits. And we ran through the whole show at 5 o'clock, and it went super, except we were an hour too long.
Oh, God.
52 minutes too long. They cut four things out of the things I was in. They cut two of the Smother Brothers were the hosts at the time. They cut things out of there. And then they went on that night, and they were a minute too short. And so they get on stage and do something. And they told the Smother Brothers, and they said, come on, you're ugly. You come on with us, so make us look good. So I did a little bit with them at the end. But it was more fun. The cast of characters there, they're the nicest people. I worked at NBC for a while and were the cameramen and the technicians and stuff, except for one person. It was an absolute no good, terrible person. I thought he was a ball player or manager or something. He was just terrible. Joe Piscopo walked around and helped everybody with every lines. He had lines written on his arms so that they wouldn't forget him, and he'd hold it up in front of them so they could read it. Mary Gross, is that your sister?
No.
Oh, she is the sweetest, nicest person. We were all getting wet because of the rain coming down. She walked around with a towel. See, I don't want anybody to catch cold. I went, Mary, will you leave people? She was so nice. She looks at a script, and in 2 seconds, she memorizes two or three pages. She is phenomenal. She is so terrific, so talented, and all she does is worry about everybody else throughout the whole show. And now I'll tell you who the bad guy was. The guy would not even do the pre-game, not even do the pre-show at 5 o'clock. He had a stand-in, standing in there for him. Eddie Murray, the biggest talent on the show, whole show. And I guess it's just too much too fast. And he was terrible. Even the Smothers Brothers, we had a little party afterwards, and they came over, and Dick says, can you believe him? I thought I was terrible, but he is obnoxious. And I said, well, you know, it's just that I guess he came up so fast, and he cannot move without just people. You should have seen the audience. As soon as they saw him, they went crazy. I mean, he's so loved. And I guess there's no life for him anymore because he can't go down an elevator, self-service elevator, right? And the computer comes out. You're Eddie Murray. Oh, my gosh. Oh, would you please sign my doors? You know, it's just he can't go around any place, and he's turned into a shell. And it's so sad because the rest of the people were so – I never had as much fun as that program. It was so much fun, and they paid me. I found out why I'm not good on television, though. I'm not good on television. The reason is I'm 340 pounds, and I'm only 5 inches tall on a TV screen. I need CinemaScope. I'm big screen. I signed to do a movie.
Did you really?
With Ruth Gordon, Jonathan Winters. I'm going to bring up names you don't know. Lyle Izada, and he is a football player. He's 6'8", weighs about 320 pounds. And Matusak, who's 6'9", weighs about 280 pounds, okay? And myself, it's King Lear. or it's a baseball game between the Japanese car makers and the American car makers, and I'm supposed to play a blind umpire. And I said, I can do the blind, but I'm not too sure about the umpire. So he said, we know. We've seen you umpire. We said, anyway, we're supposed to be shooting it right now, and Ruth Gordon is in Spain now, and so they postpone it until the beginning of March or beginning of May. And then they just postponed it again till the end of May, and they wrote my part out longer, and they wanted me for 2 weeks. Now they want me for 3 weeks.
Oh, that's great.
No, because I have commitments the end of May and the beginning of June. I do there's a celebrity sports golf tournament that I sponsor up there for Easter Seals, and I've been doing it for 5 years, and it makes money for Easter Seal, and I can't. That's June 3rd, and I will be there no matter what. I come from a small little community, 16,000 Italians, and they're all relatives, Endicott, New York, and they have a BC Open, which is it's on the National Golf Tour. Okay, BC meaning before Christ, the comic strip. Jim Hart is from up where we are. Johnny Hart is up from where we are, and he sponsors the golf tournament and stuff. So I do this, and he's there for the tournament for March of Dimes, and I can't get out of it, so I can't do the movie now. And this body was made for CinemaScope. Let me tell you, I would look great on a big screen.
Well, you were on TV for a while doing the Game of the Week, and you opened your book.
Yeah, it was not the Game of the Week. It was the backup Game of the Week. And nobody watches the backup Game of the Week. I mean, we went into Boise, Idaho. That's it. No one ever saw me in Philadelphia, New York, in Boise, Idaho. And then they come out and say, your ratings were low. They don't have Nielsen in Boise, Idaho. Naturally, my radio. Read the Boise Gazette. I was a scream. I will go there today. They'll put up parades. They'll have the. There's a monument of me in the middle of Boise. I was terrific in Boise. But doing the backup game of the week, I told them it was like doing a telethon for hiccups. Would you call in and give money for hiccups? Of course. It was so funny when I retired. They never fire you in broadcasting. Well, you wouldn't know because who would ever fire you? I mean, you're sickening. I can't stand people with talent. It's horrible. Anyway, I walked in front of Mike Wiseman, who was the head of NBC at the time, sports department. And Michael said, sit down. I've got something to tell you. I said, know what you're going to tell me. I know it. I know exactly. Was it my voice? He said, well, that had something. I said, it's too squeaky, isn't it? Yeah. He said, and I talk too fast. He said, yeah. A lot of times, and you can't understand me. He said, yeah. A lot of times I couldn't understand what you were saying. I said, and I didn't do my homework, right? You know, I was talking about Ustremski in Boston, and we were doing Philadelphia. He said, yes, a lot of times people did not know who you were or where you were. I said, also, it's because I mispronounce names, right? He said, yes, you mispronounce names constantly. And for that, you're going to fire me just for those little things. He said, Ronnie, we're not firing you. We're not renewing your contract. Now, that did not make me feel better, but that's the term that you hear. You would never hear it. But that's what they say. You're not fired. We're just not renewing your contract. Well, I cried for 3 or 4 hours, and then I figured out who fault it was. I said, it must have been the technicians. No, there's nothing you can do with his face. I mean, even my mother calls me Eskimo face. I mean, you want to really be put down when your mother says you look like, oh, you're terrible looking, horrible. And then the technicians could do nothing. I mean, they were all Italians, and they tried to help the voice, but it's impossible to help. So I looked in the mirror, and I knew exactly whose fault it was. The ball players. Because you know why? They had unpronounceable names. Akin Wanduhar. I mean, I don't, what is it? How would you say I-O-R-G? His first name is Garth. That'll start it off for you.
Org.
Org. Now, I called him Org. He was unbeatable. I mean, he went 5 for 5. Babe Ruth was forgotten about. Well, Garth Orge was at bat. What is a Garth Orge? Nobody heard of him since or that. He went crazy every time I ever was on television. I couldn't. Where was Willie Mays, right? John Smith. When I needed those guys. Unpronounceable names. Ball players are mean people. They do. There was one shortstop named Dio Boskowitz. Are you kidding me? You try to say a ground ball to Diabopka. You can't do it and throws it to first. That's the only reason I got fired. It's not because I'm verbally handicapped. That's not true.
Can you remember for us the first game that you umpired in the American League?
Yeah. See, being 340, I don't go into a place and buy a suit off the rack. So my umpire suit had to be sent to me. I think it was Omar the tent maker that was doing it at the time. And he called up and said, we'll get it there to you in Washington, D.C. And they still blame me for losing Washington baseball in Washington. They say it was my fault. That's the reason they left, because Luciano umpired in Washington. I don't believe that, true, but there's a lot of things I don't believe. Anyway, I was there for opening day, and I didn't have the suit, okay? And so I couldn't open, so they brought in a replacement for me. And then I walked in, and I had my black suit on, because I'm colorblind, and the only color I wear is black all the time, because you can't, you know, I can't put anything with it that doesn't look well, except my brown socks on occasions. But anyway, we got the black suit on, and they said, that looks like an umpire suit. Why don't you wear that? And I said, okay, but where will I work? We've got an extra umpire. And they said, work down the left field line. I said, there are only four umpires that ever work. They've never worked with a fifth umpire. And he said, well, get out there and see what you can do. I said, okay, fine. Now, I went down the left field foul line and did nothing. I looked like a G-man. The president was there, and they said, oh, what a great idea. Dress a guy up in an umpire suit, put him on the field, and he looks just – he's. And I played it to the hilt. I kept adjusting my gun underneath my shoulder, which was not a gun, of course. But I told everybody, yeah, I was just there protecting the government. And I should have known from that day – that it wasn't going to work out. If people thought I was a G-man and not an umpire, I'm not going to make it as an umpire. And it only took me 15 years before I realized it. And it wasn't long. It took me 12 years of playing football before I realized I couldn't play. It took me 15 years umpires before I could realize I couldn't umpire. It took the broadcasting network only 3 years to find out I couldn't broadcast. I mean, Bantam Books, this is the second book. They haven't realized it. Don't tell them, Terry. Please don't tell them. Yeah, let Strike 3 come out.
Did it throw you off at first when the fans would either cheer or boo? Because when you're first getting started and you have that kind of incredibly large response surrounding you,
what do you
think
you
really
would do?
It would be really hard to concentrate on whether a ball was a
What
a
do you think you
strike.
Would do if someone started, 20,000 people started to boo?
Panic or weep.
Well, see, the way they teach you, there's a school for umpires, okay? You're not naturally this dumb. You have to go to school to become it. On the bottom of the certificate, it said certified idiot. It does. I kid you not. It does. Certified idiot in the bottom of your certificate once you graduate. Eric Gregg, right here. Okay, he goes down to the school, and the first thing they do, the teachers, they chastise you. They just call you every name under the sun. They call your mother names, they call your father names, they call you, if you're fat, they call you fatso. If you're thin, they call you skinny, they call you four eyes, they call you everything in the whole world. And most people either cry, you know, break out in tears, or go home that night and want to kick the, if it's a good thing their wife isn't there, because they go home and beat her up every single night. It's just, and the women there, I know, go home and meet their husbands. We have women umpires that go to the school. It's terrible, except for Eric Gregg. Never flinched. Never even made a motion for 3 solid weeks. They called him every name under the sun, and he never blinked. Finally, they brought him in, and they sat him down, and they said, Eric, will you please tell me, after 3 weeks of calling you every name under the sun, why in the world don't you have any reaction at all? He said, are you kidding me? I'm black, I was born in the ghetto, and I have no money. Do you think I've ever been called those names before? He said, every day of my life, this is nothing new. This is just like home. And he makes the greatest umpire in the world because it just doesn't faze him. He's been brought up that way. But it was very difficult for me to learn to do that. And that's why I tried to win all the fans and ballplayers over to my side. I would do anything. You know, bring them apples. You want an apple here? I'll cut it for you. I'll do anything. Just don't boo me. And after a while, it was funny because during the ball game, oh, you bum, you idiot. And I said, oh, you know, and it would hurt. Then I'd walk out of the field and they'd say, weren't you the umpire on first base? And I'd shy away saying, please don't hit this 340 pounds. Please don't. And they'd say, oh, hey, you're real. Would you sign this for me? Boy, we thought you were great. I said, well, why did you boo me? Well, you have to boo umpires. But it was a whole different thing when they saw you in person. It's, I guess when you put the uniform on, they start yelling and screaming at the uniform. And I try to talk myself into thinking that way. They weren't yelling at me. They were yelling at the uniform. In baseball, different than any other sport, because in hockey, if one player gets mad at the other, hits him over the head with a stick. Okay, and then everything's fine. So they have 10 stitches, and they come back on the ice and play. And in football, you just pick up his mask and hit him, or you bite him, you know, do all those things. And in basketball, you elbow him underneath the backboards, and nobody sees it, or everybody's happy. They walk around like this. But in baseball, if you strike out with a bases loaded, what can you do? It's a non-contact. So you yell and scream at the umpire. So I figured, oh, hey, I'm a psychiatrist. I got my couch here. Now call my mother names. Go ahead. Get it all off your chest. And then you go home and you won't beat your wife. You won't do any of the bad things. So I talked myself into being, I'm just a psychiatrist. Go ahead and call me names and do all those things. It was all right if the player came out the next day. And Billy Martin, who, he's always in the news. He is not the nicest person in the world. The latest thing is last Sunday he was arrested again for disorderly conduct again. He's not a PR person. He's a winner in baseball because in order to be a leader in a sport, you have to be a no-good SOB. You can't just be a nice person and be a good leader. You have to be mean because you have to demand respect from other people and stuff, and you have to make decisions that make other people mad. So he is great that way as a leader. But he's no good person. He punches out marshmallow salesmen. He had a $10,000 lawsuit against him for punching out a marshmallow. He's gotten fired in 8 different jobs. He's been to 8 different clubs. He's gotten fired every place he goes. He is just, he's close to being an alcoholic. He drinks almost as much as I do. He has no endearing qualities whatsoever. Except when he manages, he will throw on a Donnybrook. He'll come out, scream, yell in Hollywood. Then the next day he will come out and he'll say, did you see me yesterday? I said, yeah, I was right here. Wasn't I terrible? And I said, what do you mean terrible? He said, well, first of all, I kicked my hat. And normally when I kick my hat, it goes, you know, in like second or third row. It went 3 feet. Worst hat kick I've ever had my whole life. And then I kicked dirt on you. I mean, why did you move to the grass and I couldn't kick any more dirt on you? I tried to kick grass on you and it didn't work. Now it's all forgotten with the next day and he's talking about it like it was a lot of fun and it was That's the camaraderie that you get between ballplayers and umpires that makes it nice the next day. At the time, it's never funny, but the next day it's fun. Except there was one person that never did it that way, and that was Earl Weaver. He was manager with Baltimore. Now he's doing a shtick on ABC television. He's doing color commentary and doing a super job. But as a manager, he would never forget. He would bring up things 10 and 12 years ago that you did wrong. I don't remember what I had for breakfast. He's talking 10, 12 years ago. Can you imagine if your spouse would remember everything you did wrong for 12 years? Or if your child, and all the time you're growing up, all your mother and father did was say, remember when you were 6 and you did this wrong, and 7 when you'd hate them, right? I hate her a weaver. I mean, the man never forgets. How about the good times? There must have been one time I got one right, but he never brought up the good times, just the bad times.
Do you find yourself watching baseball on TV a lot or going to games now that you don't umpire?
I went to 100 ball games last year, Major League. They only play 162. They only play 80 here in Philadelphia. They play 81 on the road and 80 at home. So I watch them all the time. I went to 100 of them. And one of the reasons I go is I don't have to pay. I get a lifetime pass. I'm very cheap. I'm exceptionally cheap, and they pay me. But I go to the games, and I get excited because I know little insights. You know, I know who's gay on the field. That's a heck of a thing. I know who's gay, right? And I know who's fighting with their wife and who's sleeping with whom and all that stuff. I'm a gossip. I'm a terrible gossip. Yeah, I told you about that Saturday Night Live. It's terrible. But I sit there in the stands, I know that. And it's so much fun because now I don't have to make decisions. Just sit up there and laugh at all the things that happen.
Do you yell at the umpire?
Never. No, I would never do that because, you know, it would hurt me. And second of all, I'm always amazed at how bad I was and how good they are. Because every time I watched it on slow motion action on television, I would look and I would be wrong. And I'm watching slow motion action on television, and they're right. 99% of the time I said, how did they do it? Oh, son of a guns, they're mostly right. One of the reasons I never did anything well is that, you know, I never read the rule book. And the reason is it's not written in Braille. It's written by a Philadelphia lawyer. So I never read the rule book. There's one rule which I – first of all, the word is balk. Now, I don't know – do you know how to spell balk?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know everything. Terry, you're sickening. You know that. There's somebody that it's very much like you. His name is Jim Palmer, and he's a pitcher with Baltimore. He does commercials for Jockey Shorts, and he looks great in Jockey Shorts. I mean, I'm Fruit of the Loom, 340 pounds. I am not Jockey Short. I hate him for that. He won every award there is to win in the American League for pitching. The man was an orphan. He was adopted by millionaire parents. Are you sick yet? You will be. Listen, he married his high school and college sweetheart. She was homecoming queen and head of the cheerleaders. You sick yet? They have two children, both in the accelerated group. One is 13 and will go to college next year at 14. Now, I hate this man with a passion, and you are second in line to him. You realize that, don't you? I never liked him or you, Terry.
Well, I
shook you up.
I hardly think we're comparable, but yes. Where were we? Balks. You never called balks.
I never called a balk because, first of all, I don't understand it. I can't spell the word. I never understood it. I never did anything. And in 12 years, I never call it. And it's something you should call constantly. There was a manager by the name of Gene Mauch, who used to be here in Philadelphia way back before you were born in the 60s and stuff. And the man... he's crazy about balks. You could be a horrible umpire, a terrible ball player. If they were three box call, oh, what a great game it was, but you lost. It doesn't make any difference. Loved balks. And he's screaming at me one day, Ronnie, he's balking. You have to call it. You have to call it. Why don't you break your streak and call it? I said, that's it. Gene, come here right now. Just tell me what the man is doing wrong. And if he does it, I'll call it. He said, all right. He's a right-handed pitcher, and he's dipping his left shoulder. I said, his shoulder? He's dipping. He said, that's right. He's dipping his left shoulder towards home plate and then throwing to first. That's an illegal. He cannot do it. I said, Gene, you got it. And I stood there for 3 innings, did not dare to blink. I held my eyes open with my fingers. Tears are running down my eyes because I want to blink, but I'm watching the shoulder. I'm watching the shoulder. No movement. Then finally I hear, he bopped, I said, Gene, come out here right now. You stand in front of me and you tell me that he moved his shoulder. He said, no, he bent his knee. His knee? First you tell me shoulder, now you tell, I don't understand box. He either moves his shoulder or his knee. Don't tell me both. How, can you watch a person's knee and shoulder at the same time? Of course not. You have to watch one particular thing. I said, don't tall box. I lied. I called a balk once. We were in, I'm going to bring up a trivia thing now. There's a man by the name of Frank Quillacy. He was a manager for about a day and a half out in Minnesota, and he was a ball player for maybe 3 days. And he was out there, and he was Italian, and he's in the dugout, and he said, "Ronnie, call a balk, please. The guy's been balking for 10 years. Nobody ever calls him. Please, Paisan, come on, call a balk." Every time an umpire yells balk, the other three umpires throw their arms in the air. And the reason they do that is four against the world. And if one guy calls balk, then the other three go with him. Everybody's, "Oh, yeah, it must have been a balk." I don't know what a balk is to this day. But I heard my third base umpire yell balk. And I did it. I jumped in the air and I said, "Balk!" Standing ovation. The ball, "Attaboy, Ronnie!" Quillizzy comes out, pats me on the back. "Attaboy, Ronnie, you did it. You called a balk. That guy's been cheat for 10 years. Thank you for calling it." I couldn't wait. After the half inning, everything quieted down. I went over to the third base umpire. And I said, "What did he do?" He said, "Who?" I said, "The pitcher. How did he balk?" He said, "I don't know. You call it, didn't you?" I said, "No, didn't you yell balk?" He said, "No, there was a guy in the stands that yelled balk." A guy in the stands. So I really didn't call it, but a guy in the stands called it. But you know what happened as soon as I yelled balk? The other three umpires went right up with me. Balk! Just along with me. Four against the world. And to this day, I still don't know what the kid did.
I thought that for a balk, you have to actually move your arm, like do a quarter of a pitch or something. I didn't realize that such a small gesture could be interpreted as a balk.
Yeah, it's a balk. It's just a small movement. They tell, if you stop your action, if you drop the ball, if you move any motion towards home plate and then you turn towards first, that's a balk. And I didn't know. Any motion towards home and then you turn towards third, it's a balk. You can move your knee, your foot, your shoulder, your, you know, waist, anything. I thought you were going to ask me about writing. You know, the funny part when we went to write the second book, I knew, I don't know how to write. They said, in order to have a best-selling book, you need a Jewish author. So David Fisher and I have been friends for 100,000 years. I said, "David, you got 18 books, 16 bestsellers. Please write a book for me so I can be a bestseller." He said, "Come on." And that's when I took him the 600 pages the first time. Now, the second time, he said, "Now, this is the way you write it." We did interviews, 130 interviews, put them on tape. And then we had them transcribed. And we sat down and we read them all over. Then we read them all over again. And then we read them all over again. I said, "This is writing?" He said, "We haven't started yet. Now we put everything into categories." I said, "This is too hard. What are you going to..." We took all transcripts and categorized them and cross-categorized them into umpires talking to ball players, umpires talking to managers, managers talking to ball players, managers on the field, off the field. We had like six tables full of all categories, only 130 people, but all categories. I said, "Now do we write?" He said, "No, now we outline it." I said, "David, for Christ, we're in a year and a half already." I said, "David, when do we..." He said, "This is the way you do it." We sat down, and what we did is we wrote out 11 chapters, okay? And he said, "This is what we're going to do. First chapter, second chapter." Okay, fine. Outline's there. "Now do we write?" "Now we write." And I figured, okay, 6 months later, we're all set. It was just a little under 3 weeks, and we were finished. And we had 9 chapters, and he said, "We only wanted 300 pages. We got 325 and 9 chapters. We can't even put the other two in." It was the easiest writing in the whole world. We sat down at typewriters. He would go, and I would go, tip, 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 one finger typing. And then we'd read my page, and he'd throw it in the waste paper basket, and we'd put his into the book. And then we'd read my page. But that's the way it was. And it was the easiest thing I've ever done, those 3 weeks. And they were the most fun, the most creative thing, because he would say, "How about this line?" It was the first line of the chapter was difficult. That was the first page, page and a half, that was difficult. The rest of the chapter went, boom. I mean, like a day and a half, and a chapter was done. And I couldn't believe it. I said, "David, it's so simple." He said, "That's why we did all the reading and all the category." So we knew right away. We said, "Okay, we're talking about managers. How about the story there? No, this story here." And then we put the two together, and it came in. And I was so happy at the end of that third week. It's like a high that I receive. I only see highs a couple of times in life, and I guess I know why people take drugs and stuff, because every time I was on the ball field, it was a high for me. Even if the teams were losing or winning or something, a home run in the bottom of the ninth, and my blood was boiling. It just would be so great. The end of that 3 weeks, there was such a letdown because we had the book done. Those 3 weeks that we did that book, I was just the happiest person in the whole world, and I can't wait for Strike 3. I want the interviews I want to do again. I don't want to do all that other work. Can't we hire somebody to do the other? He said, "No, we have to do that ourselves." But I can't wait for those another 3 weeks to sit down and start writing again. And then I'm like a little kid. I walk in a bookstore. And the first book, I said, "I want my picture on the book because it's going to be the only one I do." And they put a mask on me. and put my picture on a book. And I said, all right, no mask this time, and I want two pictures. I want both sides of my face. And so they put two pictures on the front of the book. And now I walk into a bookstore, and I say, look, that's me. I can't believe I'm like a three-year-old kid. And I walk up, and I said, do you happen to have Strike 2? And they said, let's see, third shelf. And about, I said, don't you recognize me? You know, they said, listen, it's back in the sports. I said, wouldn't you like to come back? I said, I want to show. And I show them, well, would you like to sign them? Oh, of course, I'll sign the book for you. And then you put autographed on the front. You want to buy a book, Strike 2, I guarantee you 90% of the United States has autographed books, because I've been everywhere walking and saying, I'll sign the book for you.
Well, you know, you mentioned the mask that's on your face in the first one. Is the umpire uniform as uncomfortable as it looks, especially in the hot summer?
No, you wouldn't believe it. It isn't at all. First of all, now they let us do nice things like just wear short sleeve shirts. When I started, you had to wear a coat, and then I was the rebellion, and I said no coats, and they said all right, long sleeve shirts. And then the third year, they said all right, you can be a normal human being and wear short sleeve shirts. And the pant, we have extra size pockets and extra size this and extra size that. One of the things you learn as an umpire, you have to dust off home plate. You have to be a house cleaner and dust off home plate. And you always dust off home plate with your backside facing the ball players and not the fans. And the reason is because in the minor leagues, you can't afford good uniforms and they always rip. You know, so when you bend over, you're exposing yourself to the crowd. So they said, don't ever bend that way. Well, now I could bend towards the crowd because they're double knit stretches, and they're like a lycra or something. So they breathe, and they're just so comfortable. They're great. Even the athletic supporters, you know, before they were small and tight. And it's terrible when you're 6'4 and go in and ask for an extra small. You know, athletic support. I felt so guilty. Now I go in and ask for an extra large and go to my friend back home and have him redo the whole thing and tailor the whole thing. So it fits perfectly. It's extra small, but he cuts it down for about the size. And everything is so comfortable. It's beautiful. It really is. It's fun to be out there. We don't even pay for the shoes anymore. The Pony Shoes gives us like 6 or 7 pairs of shoes to umpire with and gives the whole family sneakers and bags and plus money. They pay us like $20,000 just to wear the shoes. And we are Pony does. And I'm telling you, it was the greatest thing in the whole world. Shouldn't have given it up. They had so many things. They were watches. Used to give every umpire a couple of watches a year, you know, the $300 and $400 watches, because that was the national, the natural watch or whatever it is for baseball. And so they give the umpires that because we had to carry them on the field. We got free everything.
Do you miss it?
I miss the free stuff. I told you I'm cheap. I miss all that freebies. Yeah, I want the freebies. And you never had to buy anything. You'd walk into the best restaurant in the world and you'd say, who's your favorite player? You know, and like here in Philadelphia, I would go into Mike Schmidt and I'd say, sign balls for me. And Mike Schmidt, of course, he would sign like 10 or 12 balls. And I'd go to the place and I had the ball signed by Mike Schmidt of baseball. Are you kidding? Here's the best table. He'd clear out half a room, you know, and say, sit down. And the chef would come out and say, you got a baseball by Mike Schmidt? Yeah, right here. What do you want to eat? You know, a pheasant under glass, you name it. Duck a l'orange, you got it, no matter what it is. And the best thing, and you never paid for, they bring the wine out, Rothschild, 64, you know, the greatest stuff in the whole world, and we get it for free. I miss the freebies.
You miss umpiring?
I miss the gossip. Yeah, I miss the gossip on the field, but I don't miss it. I miss the travel, too. I never thought I'd miss I miss the hotel rooms. Getting up in the morning, and I'd say, okay, pick up the phone, bring me some orange juice, squeeze it fresh, no pits, and make it very cold. 2 seconds later, rap, rap, rap on the door. There it is. Most delicious oyster. I get up and take a shower. I come back. The bed's made. So now I go home. I tell my wife, she says, give me some orange juice. Get it yourself. I said, well, we'll make the bed. Make it yourself. I said, they do it for me in a hotel, and you won't do it for me. They don't even know me in the hotel. They do it for me. Why won't you do it for me? I had to get divorced.
Of course, home isn't a hotel.
No.
And your wife, of course, isn't an employee.
He's no longer wife.
Well, it's great to see you again.
Oh, Terry, it's so nice, even though I don't like you. It's just so nice to see you again, really. I told you, I can't stand talented people, and you know so darn much.
Hey. Well, good luck with your new book and the movie that you're making, and thanks a lot for being here.
All right. Will you bring me back for Strike 4 and Strike 5?
That's right. Strike 36.
Thanks, Terry. We'll see you again.
Ron Luciano's been my guest, the former American League umpire who you might have seen just a few weeks ago on Saturday Night Live calling the show on account of rain. And his new book is called Strike Two. His first book was a bestseller, The Umpire Strikes Back. And this is Strike Two, just published by Bantam Books. And thanks again for talking with us.
Yeah, it's in all good bookstores, in all bad bookstores.
3 minutes to 5 o'clock. We'll be joining National Public Radio at 5 for tonight's edition of All Things Considered. I'll tell you what's happening tomorrow afternoon on Fresh Air after this report from Shadow Traffic.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. We just completed an opening on the Burlington-Bristol Bridge from 421 to 432. Traffic very heavy in the area. Also expecting a Tacony-Palmyra Bridge opening between 515 and 530. For motorists traveling home on the westbound East River Drive, slow going from Hunting Park Avenue through the Twin Bridges. The Boulevard Detour in pretty good shape at this hour. Westbound on the Schuylkill Expressway slows approaching Montgomery Drive through the Twin Bridge crossover. Also northbound I-95 slowing for over a half mile approaching the Ray Street merger through Aramingo Avenue. That's Shadow Traffic for WHYY 91 FM. This is Jim Battalese.
That Shadow Traffic Report was funded by Cotman Transmissions. Tomorrow afternoon on Fresh Air at 3 o'clock, we expect to broadcast a National Press Club appearance by historian Barbara Tuchman. And at 4 o'clock, we'll be joined by Hank Osnetsky, who is the founder and the leader of the Klezmer Conservatory Band. And Klezmer music is the music played by Jewish musicians who emigrated to America, and the traditional Jewish music got mixed in with American pop and jazz. And Hank Osnetsky and his band play that kind of music. He'll also be bringing with him some 78 recordings of some of the klezmer musicians from the 1920s. So that's all coming up tomorrow afternoon on Fresh Air. I hope you can be listening. By the way, this Sunday at 2 o'clock, the subject on the Best of Fresh Air will be Islam. And we'll be featuring two interviews, one with Dan Pipes, who's the author of a book on the history of Islam and the Islamic revival's effect on international politics. Then we'll also be hearing from Egyptian feminist Nawal El-Sadawi. So that's this Sunday at 2 o'clock on the Best of Fresh Air. I hope you can be listening. Bob Carlin contributed to today's show. Ron Carson was the technical director. Maeve McGoran is the associate producer of the program. Danny Miller, the co-producer. My name's Terry Gross. Thanks for listening. I hope you have a great evening. This is WHYY FM in Philadelphia.
Good evening. From National Public Radio in Washington, I'm Susan Stamberg.
And this is Noah Adams with All Things Considered.
I fear you have too many holidays. When I call some government officials, they were away on leave. I found it's a very